So before we get started, coronavirus, Will. I mean, Will, Neil. Who's Will?
John, my mate John, tweeted today that when they look back at this season, it'll look like something like Preston from 1892. They won the league by 40 points, but there was the plague to deal with. That's what it's going to look like, you know what I mean? Like in 100 years' time, they'll go, that wasn't a proper football season. So that didn't really happen.
What I want to ask you, first of all, is coming down from Liverpool, is the hysteria and madness in Liverpool comparable to what's happening in London?
Well, I don't know. I mean, because I've only really been in London for a period of time, so it's hard to tell. So there might be, but broadly, like, the attitude is, let's just win this fucking league in front of humans. Can we just win this league in front of crowds, please? Like, from a Liverpool point of view. Evertonians are running around licking people's faces. But Liverpool, from a Liverpool supporters point of view, it is, you know, I feel as though we've got away with one with Cheltenham and the rugby union happening, because the Tories aren't going to want to cancel sport while posh people like it.
It's true.
Is there a way we can just extend? I'm gutted there's not a test match next week so we can get Crystal Palace at home. Because that's ultimately, you know, when's the boat race? I was Googling it before. When's the boat race? They're not going to want to cancel the boat race, are they? They're going to put the boat race in front of crowds. So,
Whatever happens, the boat race is happening.
Yeah,
people.
The boat race is happening in front of humans. And they're going to shake hands afterwards. It's really strange that I never thought that, like, as and when Liverpool were about to win their first title, my biggest issue would be germs. Like, I'd have thought it'd be Manchester United or something, you know, Alex Ferguson for a while. Look there or thereabouts, but it's literally bacteria that's going to do us the most damage.
We're going to talk a little bit more about the impact that could have on your team's ascent to the title in just a moment. But before that, let's kick off. This is the Football Fans Podcast with myself, Jordan Jarrett Bryan here. Don't forget to subscribe to us if you hadn't already. We're across all the usual platforms, Spotify, iTunes, Apple Music, isn't it? Apple Music, they call it, not iTunes. All that goodness, and all the social media platforms as well, Facebook, Instagram and Twitter. We've got G back. What are you saying, G?
Yeah, I'm good, man. I'm good.
Yeah, convenient. You win this weekend and all of a sudden you're back on the pod.
We're winning every week now.
A couple of weeks ago you were missing. Who beat you 2 weeks ago?
I don't know. Bayern Munich, maybe. I don't know.
Where was G that week?
Oh, man. I was somewhere. No, I was at the game the day that you did the podcast.
That's right. That's your fault.
That's poor scheduling.
All right, you know what? So to be fair, you're right. You should have been here, though, still. And making her debut on the FFP, yes. We have, from the Gold Diggers podcast, Anita.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Oh, very, very well, thank you. Just come on the pod. Before we go any further forward, tell us a little bit about Gold Diggers. Mm-hmm. How long it's been going and what's going on? What's it all about?
Well, Gold Diggers is basically a platform for just women to talk about men's football, because a lot of men are... I don't want to say misogynist, but but you do get the odd misogynist here and there. But yeah, Gold Diggers is basically just a safe place for women to come and banter about football, light-hearted banter as well, cold-hearted banter too, because Liverpool fans get it the most. Not anymore, not this season, but last season.
Oh, they're still getting it now. Even this season, they're still getting it.
We're very relaxed. My team unlikely, but we're very relaxed. Like, if I can, insofar as like the Pope speak for the Catholics, if I can't speak for the collective, I think it's fair to say we're very relaxed. Yeah, say what you like, fill your boots.
Okay. Well, just knowing for the next hour I'm going to be coming at you. Okay?
Honestly. Okay. You won't take the smile off my face. It was lovely of you all to give me a guard of honour on the way in. Very kind. Thank you very much.
Do you know what? 3-0. That's fine. Anyway. But yeah, that's basically what we are. We've been doing it for just over a year now. So, you know, if you are a female and you do love football and you don't want to speak to any misogynists, come at us.
Can guys listen too?
Yeah, guys can listen to.
I was going to ask, is it actively that is the MO of your podcast that it's women speaking specifically about men's football?
Yeah, literally, because we all really love men's football and we haven't really delved into other types of sports like basketball and, you know, cooking in the kitchen like most men expect us to be doing.
Yikes.
So, yikes. But it's like... it's just a safe place for women, basically. And men can listen too. A lot of men do listen to our podcast as well. They find it interesting the way women see football as well, which is a bit patronising, but hey, we see it the same way as you guys do, but whatever.
So you've used the word misogynistic or misogyny twice, and now you feel you know, some men are quite patronising. Yeah. So give me an example. What do you mean by that?
Do you know what? I've had like a lot of feedback from our first ever recording when men will be like, oh, tell us the offside rule then. And literally, I will literally use a guy's hairline because it's so patronising. No, honestly, it's so patronising. Yeah, literally, it's so patronising.
To be fair, I know certain men don't know the offside rule.
Exactly. And I'm not being funny. It does change quite often. So like,
I don't think the refs know the offside rule, exactly. Do they?
Wolves supporters definitely don't. No idea. They're angry about it, but they've got no idea really in detail.
No, honestly. But yeah.
So just rhetoric from men that it's just very patronising, condescending, that you're not on a regular basis, inspired you guys to start up your podcast that was all female. Okay.
Yeah.
And how has it been received so far?
It's been received so greatly. It's unbelievable. Like, sometimes I even look back and think, wow, you lot really like what we're talking about? Okay. Mm-hmm. You still do get the old men that are like, get back in the kitchen and what you're doing watching football.
I get that on my podcast. From this. Don't worry about it. It's cool.
But it's like, we take it as banter now. So like, because we know there are other girls out there going through the same thing, like one of the most empowering thing about starting this was that when we got all the girls together and I put the initial tweet out that, hey, we're looking for girls that are into men's football, a lot of people responded and they're like, oh my god, I've always loved football, but I've never had a place where I could actually talk about football or listen to football. Mm-hmm. So it's just really empowering. It's literally a safe haven because a lot of girls have actually come out about, I'm saying this as if like they're coming out about their sexuality, but no, they've literally.
You know what you mean.
You know what I mean? Yeah, they've come out about watching football. It shouldn't be that much of a big deal in the 21st century, but it is. But yeah.
So I've got a two-part question, and then we'll move forward. In the same way that I think that a lot of black people talk about sport very differently to a lot of white people. There's a different, not better or worse, just differently. I think when we're at certain, we'll be at weddings or christenings or family gatherings, we talk about sport a different way. We don't talk like Jamie Redknapp and Graham Souness. We don't talk about it in the same way as those guys.
Yeah.
Do you think the same is true of men and women? Do you think that women talk about football in a very different way to, again, not better or worse, but a different way to men? Is there a different tone in how you just talk about it? Maybe there isn't. I'm just wondering if it's the same thing that I kind of feel.
I think there may be a different tone. So, for example, if I'm talking to a guy about football and the guy doesn't really give it back to me as much as he would with his mates, you know, like there's a difference when I'm talking to a guy. But when girls talk about football to other girls, it's the same type of energy that I'd hear with a guy talking to another guy about football, you know. Mm-hmm. Men just don't really even want to step on our toes. Which is nice, but step on my toes a little bit, you know? Like,
the assumption is that you're not ready to really come on my level and talk about it on my level. All right. Just come on the pod. Glad to have you here. And our third guest is, you heard him earlier on. He's, you can probably hear the smile down the microphone. Neil from the Anfield Rap. How you doing, sir?
Wonderful. Thank you very much. Thank you for having me again.
I think it's the last time, like, by the way. Sorry.
No, I thought it might have to be. Well, I mean, you know, there's a fighting chance that we get beat on Wednesday and we're basically irrelevant to the grand scheme of the football conversation for the rest of the season. So, you know, it goes both ways. But yeah, it's fabulous to come down and enjoy the, you know, as I say, there was like palm leaves being waved at me on the way in, all of that other stuff. It's fabulous to see, honestly.
Never that.
Really warm, listeners. Really warm.
Never that. We're going to get to Liverpool in a bit. We're going to start, though, with, as we do have, which is, you know, very rare on our show, two Chelsea fans. Mm-hmm. And you won a game over the weekend.
Yeah.
Wow, high fives and everything.
Yeah, it's rarely the panel's this classy.
Where are we? I'll start with you, Nita. Where are we on Frank Lampard? Because, you know, a couple of weeks in, or a couple of weeks will go by, wins a couple of games. He's really good. He's got it. He knows what he's doing. He's got it together, blah, blah, blah. Loses two games. He's out of his depth. Yeah. Out of his depth. Doesn't know what he's doing. He's not quite ready yet. Where are you on the Lampard monitor?
I've always been Lampard in, and I'm still Lampard in, because I literally believe... A lot of us Chelsea fans, we had low expectations at the start of the season. The fact that we're fourth right now is a blessing. And a lot of Chelsea fans need to realise that we're fourth by luck and by chance. Yes, okay, a bit of it is because of Lampard as well, but it's mostly by luck. And we look at Lampard and we see a manager that's premature because, he's only managed Derby in his entire managerial career. So what can we actually expect of him to come to a Chelsea side, a very big Chelsea side, and actually come and deliver? So for me, for what he's doing right now, even though we lost 3-0 to Bayern Munich, for what he's doing right now, I'm still Lampard in. I believe in the process. I don't think any other manager could have come in, seen our youth and actually play our youth the way he's playing them as well. So
what is it about him that you believe in? What is it in this style of play, his man management? What is it that you think, yeah, this is the guy that can take us back to the top?
His style of play, because a lot of Chelsea fans may agree, like before Sarri came to Chelsea, it was a lot of defensive play of football, a lot of defensive. And it's like with Lampard, I barely see us sitting back or trying to defend like a 1-0 lead or something, you know. Like I enjoy the fact that we keep going, we keep pressing. Even when we were 3-0 down, we still kept going, we kept pressing. And that's just something that we failed to see last season, the seasons before with Conte as well, Mourinho's last season as well. So I enjoy his style of play, his man management as well. I think it's second to none with the youth especially. What he's doing with Mount is exceptional. Billy Gilmore, we saw him over the weekend and against Liverpool. Absolutely amazing. Who would have thought that Billy Gilmore had that up his sleeve? Before we sold Tariq Lamptey, he came on in the Arsenal match, I believe it was.
Yeah, turned the game.
Yeah, and he turned the game
and
won.
And Tammy Abraham scored.
But yeah, what other manager would have taken a risk like that, that knows the youth system? Do you understand? So on top of that, he's my Chelsea legend, so I'll always have faith in him.
All right. You've been at the last couple of games. Mm. You've been a Lampard supporter, but yeah. I think with a tinge of apprehension. Is that fair to say?
My apprehension at the beginning was I didn't want us to treat Frank like we've treated all the other managers and ruining that legacy and that relationship. Because I almost felt at the beginning of the season it was almost an impossible job in terms of what Chelsea's normal standards are. I don't think it was an impossible job in terms of top four. I think that was within our reach of the squad. But in terms of our normal standard, which is winning the league or competing in the Champions League, we were never going to get there. But it looks as if the club have seemed to have, you know, turned the corner where they're kind of invested in him. I think some people look at the transfer window and look at it as they're not backing him. I looked at it more as on the basis of they're changing the tact and saying, well, if the value's not out there, we'll stick with young players. And I think if you do that, then it makes sense to stick with Lampard rather, because a big manager is going to just want the big players every time. So that was my apprehension. And obviously as well, you know, he's only been managing a year. So that's obviously, you know, a bit of apprehension as well. But I think it's going well.
Do you think it's going to be a bit of a pass? Do you think that there's a lot of people holding back criticising him because it's Frank Lampard?
No, I think what I do think is that there are some hypercritical people like the Lampard, that hashtag Lampard's out. And also there's some hyper-protective people, particularly in the media, you know, like his cousin Jamie, for instance,
Jamie, wipe your mouth, man.
Yeah, you know what I mean? It's like literally Lampard could do no wrong. Like fourth is a good achievement. I don't think it's an out-of-this-world achievement like people are trying to describe it, especially when compared to the competition that we have, because everyone's rubbish, right? So we should be able to be the best of that rubbish as a minimum. So I think I kind of strike in the middle. There are some people who go too far on both ways. But generally speaking, I think he's getting about what he deserves.
Okay. Neil, yesterday, were Everton that bad or were Chelsea actually that good?
I think Everton have got a massive centre midfield problem in that they haven't got one. And that creates an issue.
It's not a good start, is it?
No, it's not a good start. And that creates an issue first and foremost. You know, you go to somewhere like Chelsea, Gilmore was excellent against us, but it's not just Gilmore. I actually think Kovacic, who didn't play against Everton, but, you know, is having a really, really good season. Yeah. Chelsea have got players. And I think that's why the Lampard thing, I think, is as part of this conversation. I think he's doing all right, and I think all right's all right in that, you know, as everyone's saying, it's his first season managing a Premier League team, and I think as part of that, the number of times you see them, you know, I thought Barkley was excellent, and I think that he could well be exactly the sort of manager who can get the best out of Barkley over a longer period. I think he can make a real difference there. I think he's one of the things I think that there's going to be the proof of the pudding in is the way in which he's used his squad. So he's just had an excellent week. You can say what you want about the what felt like two drops away at Bournemouth, but the bigger game for Chelsea was Liverpool on the Tuesday night, and he built his squad to get a result against Liverpool, to beat Everton, and we'll see what happens away at Bournemouth. And we should have enough, and they were unlucky in the end. Chelsea, arguably, you know, Alonso should get a hat trick with his header in the last minute. You go right the way through those games. That's a good week of management. That's the sort of week of management that if a Jose Mourinho or Rafa Benitez, as you come out and you say, minimum expectation met. Not absolutely perfect, not 6 points plus progression in the cup. But what was the biggest game? The biggest game was getting through against Liverpool. Did we do that? Yeah, we did. And also, we did that with a bit of adversity. Two players went off injured. He made the right changes on all occasions. And I think that, you know, this is where he's in the crucible. The Bayern Munich thing, Bayern Munich are just well better than Chelsea. You know, Bayern Munich are currently one of the best three or four sides in Europe, I'd argue, this season. That's what they'll end up being and end up being shown as. They're just well better. So if they come to your gaff and, yeah, they make a bit of a show of you, well, sometimes you've just got to take those ones on the chin. What I'd say, though, is it's not like anyone's gone hiding. It's not like any of those players have gone into the shells or anything like that. They've dusted themselves off and said, we'll go, let's go. He's managed the goalkeeper situation really well. I was absolutely gutted when Caballero started against Bournemouth. Knew exactly what he was doing because he was going to bring him back in for Liverpool, and then you get to say, right, he's done his business here. I think that, you know, again, I think it's credit to Giroud, but it's also credit to Lampard. He's not... A lot of managers would have absolutely, till the bitter end, said, I'm not bringing him in. He's brought him in, and he's more than happy to shake the lad's hand afterwards and praise him. What he doesn't do is do, well, I knew all along Olivier was this. He praises him. And I think that in general, I think, and there's something else about Lampard, and there's something else about a lot of these footballers, including the ones who've ended up in the public eye in different ways. I think Carragher's a good example. You think about how they grew up literally as people. All they had in their lives from the age of 14 was football. These are intelligent young men. They always were. Lampard, Gerard, Carragher. But what they've ended up with is you end up just so fixated on everything Jose Mourinho is saying to you, on what's happening with John Terry, on winning week in, week out for Chelsea. So your intelligence that you've got gets focused into this. Since he stopped playing, Lampard says lots of interesting things about life, about how he sees things, how he sees people. You know, he very much does seem to me to be in touch with that sort of younger, or what's perceived as younger, because I think Klopp's really good at it, even though he's significantly older. But that idea that we look after these people, as these young men, as people. And I think he does it brilliantly. And I think he protected them right the way through the season. I think he continues to protect them in different ways. There'll be some of them who look back on this season. Mason Mount's a good example of one, where when he needed to be taken out, he got took out. And at the time, I'm sure he thought, why is this fella dropping me? I'm livid. I can't believe I'm getting dropped. Tomori is going to be in a similar position. He'll come back stronger next season because this fella's got faith in him. And he'll treat him with respect. But part of that respect is, when I've got to take you out, I'll take you out. I'll look after you. I'll protect you. And as I say, at the time, I'm sure they're absolutely itching and feel a bit like, how's this happened to me? Whereas in reality, he's looking after them. And I think that's the case across the board. He's done the same thing with Pedro and with Willian. And I expect Chelsea to finish the season strongly. I expect them to finish top four. And if that happens, top four, and let's say they get a result in the cup and they end up getting to the semi-final or the final of the cup, or even lift it, and they come top four, you can say, well, they did that last season under Sarri, but they've done it this season by doing things a little bit differently. And all those players now have that in their back pocket. They know that this fella's someone they can respect. And I think the only then question around Lampard is the hierarchy around him, because what they then should be looking to do is say, the way in which he's protected them, how do we protect him for three or four seasons? Because you give him that, you never know.
So my final question on this, Anita, is, do you expect Frank Lampard to, considering the summer just gone, he couldn't buy anybody, so A, we had to go with youth, but you could argue he's got good young players to go with anyway. Do you expect him to continue on that trajectory, or do you think that given the fact that he can now spend, he will be thinking, yeah, the kids have done well, we'll play some of them, but I still need two or three big signings that I know I can bank on week in, week out?
I definitely think two or three signings he's going to make. My expectation is for him to carry on with the youth. That's my expectation, but we've got to be real about it. There's a lot of pressure on him right now for what he's done already. And for what he's done already, that's basically, I feel like he's hit the peak of what he can do with what he has so far. On top of that, I'm sure Willian's probably leaving at the end of the season. Pedro's a goner as well. We need to get two wingers. We've already got Ziyech as well.
Yeah, we've already got Ziyech as well.
We need another winger, probably two wingers, because only God knows how Callum or Pulisic is going to come back as well. Our midfield, apparently, Jorginho's out as well. He could be going.
I heard a list this morning on the radio that counted about eight players that could be leaving. So it's Pedro, William, Alonso, the keeper, Kepa.
Yeah.
Aspilicueta was on the list as well. Giroud. Jorginho, that's seven already. There was somebody else. There was a long list of players that I was
even
potentially.
Kante, apparently.
Yeah, they're thinking about they might cash in. Yeah. I think I heard a couple of weeks ago that they've spotted an injury issue with him that they don't think long term can be resolved. Yeah. So if you're going to sell him now when you can get big money for him rather than 18 months, 2 years from now, when, do you know what I mean?
Exactly. And I genuinely feel like once we do sell these players, if it's this season or if it's the next season or the season after that, he is going to be forced to actually buy a lot of new players. Because at the end of the day, there's the youth, and the youth, they are doing well. But like what we saw in Bayern Munich, we do need that extra experience on the pitch as well. So I think if Lampard knows what's best for him, he would buy new players. Okay.
No player in the world should go to Paris Saint-Germain more than Kante. If Kante is going to be in a situation where he's only going to be able to play his peak game for 15 games a season, going to it in the French League where you've got six big games home and away over the course of the campaign, and then it's Champions League stuff, go somewhere where your fitness, you can manage your fitness, and your fitness can be managed.
You haven't got to be able to
hit a certain level. You know, you're not going to get, you know, you're not going to suddenly turn up one week and you're going to get absolutely legged everywhere by Etienne Capoue, and you've got to be able to step up to that challenge. And you know, the extent to which, if there's ever a player who needs to go to the sort of league now, maybe with his career and where his legs are, where he can flat track bully, it's Kante. Where, as I say, he plays at his peak for 15 games a season, plays another 15 games a season where he's getting to his peak, and they're using him, and he's managed, his minutes are managed, and what they ask of him is managed. And then the rest of the time, you know, you just come off the bench and go, you come and do the business, but we need you for Champions League quarterfinals, home and away.
The big ones,
we need you for the semi-final, home and away. That's when we need you. Chelsea haven't got that luxury, because you just got to look at this season. Top four and for the foreseeable future is going to be a scrap. And if you've got a scrap every single week and you've got this player who is terrific, don't get me wrong, but you just can't keep him on the pitch, then you're better off having the money in the bank, and he's better off going somewhere where, you know, he doesn't need to win another Premier League medal. He's got two of them with two different clubs. He doesn't need that again. He's done the business.
I blame Sarri for Kante as well.
And finally, this Gilmore kid, you were there yesterday, right? Is he as good as everyone's making out? Because I'm hearing a lot of gas about this kid, and from what I've seen of him, he looks good, but are we going to be here in 18 months' time?
Are you going to put it? Is it going to be just be cooking? Is that what you're going to say? Lamps has seemed to have faith in him since the beginning of the season. And it's funny because some people have said, oh, well, why is it he played him early on the season? He did. He just played, he brought him in games, took him out, as we kind of talked about before.
So what's he good at, though? What's his skill set?
He's good at retaining the ball.
Jordan Henderson. I need more than that.
No. He's good at.
No offense. I actually like Henderson. I need more than that.
Just wouldn't ever make a title in two seasons. He'd be sound, honestly. He doesn't need your blessing, to be honest with you, Jordan. He's going to look after it. He's really looking forward to lifting the Premier League trophy in March.
I mean, he's compared to Verratti. I heard someone say that.
Yikes!
I heard someone say that Pirlo is the Italian Bobby Gilmore.
We're moving on.
I've heard Iniesta as well. Yeah, exactly. I've heard Xavi. Yeah.
Seriously, that's the comparison.
He's not actually that good then. I'm hearing Pirlo and Iniesta.
I think he will be. Seriously, he's got some talent. I think the main thing about him is it's very easy for a youngster to come in there and kind of take the ball in a quarterback position in relatively easy games like the Everton one was. Mm-hmm. But then he actually looks forward. He gets the ball forward. He has a purpose to his passing, which Josh McEachran would be the difference, where he came on, he had a few neat touches, but he never actually gone forward. Yeah, exactly.
He spotted danger well against us. Yeah. A couple of times there was something on and he just spotted it and he just looked after it. That's the thing I'd look at. He spotted this thing's about to develop, and it looked to me like he enjoyed defending. And I think when you get a midfielder who can pass the ball but also looks like they enjoy defending,
I think he's might be so mature for his age as well. Yeah. He's 18, and you see the way he's controlling the game and he's spotting danger, like you said. Like, I'm not being funny. I don't really see Jorginho spotting danger as much as Billy Gilmore.
He doesn't.
And
if he does, his legs can't get him back.
Right.
So Gilmore McTominay.
Whoa.
I tell you what,
McTominay then, yeah?
It's been years since I've celebrated a goal as much as McTominay's at the weekend, so.
And that was a good goal.
I absolutely lost my head.
Right, so let's move on to Liverpool now. What I want to know from you, Neil, and you are the voice now of all Liverpool fans all over the world.
Yeah,
so
like the Pope.
Be aware of that. The league's been in the bag ages. But what I want to know is it important now how Liverpool win this league? The league's won. Is it for you and, you know, your friends and a lot of the fan base, is it important how you win this league? Or is it the fact that it's been 30 years, you've worked so hard for it, you couldn't give a damn if you crawled over that line?
both of those things are simultaneously true. And I know that sounds like I'm not answering the question, but my thing about this is that, listen, any league title would be absolutely amazing. But for me, last few weeks, it's been very much, I want to win it while we're playing. I want to win it when we're playing. Mm. And now there is the added literal threat, and I was joking about it before, but I'd like us to be in the ground. And it'd be a shame if we're not, but listen, you know, we'll be practical. We'll DIY, we'll find ways to enjoy ourselves, don't get me wrong. And it will be tremendous. And it will be, like, I can't tell you, I was a wreck against Bournemouth, which I know sounds ridiculous, but, you know, I was irrational at times in the second half. It would be fair to describe my inner chimp as being out, juggling, doing all, up to all sorts, my inner chimp. Just because, you know, it would have felt like if we'd have slipped up, it would have felt like things had just gone a little too wobbly. They were going to wobble at some point, but a little too wobbly. But also, there is a little bit of a ticking clock. It's now felt like it's been done for so long, it just now sort of needs to just be done. Mm. And so I think that's the thing. You know, it's two wins, and if they beat Everton and beat Crystal Palace, I'd like to think we'll still be in the ground for Crystal Palace. I think we may not be the other side of the international break, but I'd like to think we'll still be in the ground for Crystal Palace. And it's, you know, it's Saturday night at 5:30. I mean, it's the best Saturday night of my life, lining up. Like, nothing on earth. So that would be fabulous. But any win is terrific. But also, they deserve it. But one of the things I do want to see is I want to see what Virgil van Dijk does on the final whistle. Like, part of why I want them to win it while they're playing is, what does Virgil do? Virgil's come here to do this and he's done it. You know, Virgil collapses. It's not actually very much discussed. When Divock Origi scores against Tottenham, Virgil collapses. He hits the deck in the centre circle. He doesn't celebrate. He has to get up. There's all the videos of Henderson post the final whistle in Madrid and everything it meant to him at that point, and the stuff with his dad, which was genuinely moving. I'd like to think any football supporter or any human would be moved by it in part. It was moving. And these footballers have really taken on the idea that this is a quest. They had a job to do. That's 30 years of this title not being won. Having come so close last season, 97 points, win the Champions League, all brilliant, brilliant football team. And the way they've gone about the business this season, I want the final whistle to go with them on the pitch, us in the ground, us being able to celebrate it with them, because that's what they deserve. And what will be in the Champions League, it's going to be really tough on Wednesday, but that idea of that shared moment of, we've done this thing, you know, it's mad to think we've got 18 league titles, but we haven't had one for 30 years. Last time we won the league, I was 9. I've never had a pint. I've never had a pint whilst Liverpool are champions, and that's a crazy thing.
And
I'd love to have a pint while Liverpool are champions in March. You know, I've never had sex whilst Liverpool are champions, and maybe we'll box that by July. But there is all this sort of stuff that's going on around how this thing plays out, and it will be. It will just be, if we're in the ground, it will be genuinely emotional. As I say, I'm part of being a football supporter is to be misanthropic. We all want our rivals to crash and burn. We want to be able to point and laugh at them and all of that sort of stuff. But for these players who've gone through what they've gone through, Van Dijk could have gone to Man City. He could have gone to Man City, but he came to Liverpool because the theory is they'll build statues of you. Henderson's gone through this unbelievable journey where he follows Gerrard as captain and has to find his own path and does. You know, Mane's never lost at Anfield, which is insane. And that also includes when he played for Southampton, but he's never lost at Anfield. The burning desire of these footballers to do this thing and the way they've done it, which is just to blow, to ruin. I mean, Man City have lost 7 in 28. That's one in every 4 times they've gone to the pitch, because really weirdly, even though they won the league last season, Liverpool just broke them. Just gone, this is, we're going to exhaust you, we're going to tire you out, we're going to drive you mad. And that's what we've done. We've broken the best Premier League team ever.
I think that's the most impressive thing, Anita, in terms of, you know, where this Liverpool team and what they're about to achieve, and the fact that they went to the brink last season, lost one game, 98 points?
97, they got 98.
97 points, and still didn't win the league. And I remember in the first part of the season, we spoke about Liverpool. I thought Liverpool would go the other way. I thought they'd struggle to get top four, because I just thought, to go that hard for a whole season, not only physically must you be absolutely effed, but mentally, what will that do to them? Will they just think, 97 points and we couldn't do it, we're done? But to then go again and go harder is really, really impressive. As a rival fan, how impressed are you with what Liverpool have done this season?
Why would you do that to
her? I know. It's coming to you next, so you know, it's coming to your answer.
It's actually such an easy question, because from the start of the season, like, I told my, because I've got a Liverpool girl on my podcast as well, I told her, you're going to win the league this season. And she was like, nah, I don't believe it. Because Liverpool fans, they're pessimists when it comes to winning the league. You guys are.
And pessimists. You can understand why.
I can understand why. Like,
Arsenal will be the same soon.
There's no way we haven't lost it. We've got all the ways. Well, James.
But it was like, you look at how in the Champions League, how they turn things around. You look at, they went to, they lost to Real Madrid the year before, and then they come to Madrid and win the Champions League. That's winning mentality right there. Like, I looked at Liverpool from the jump. I think the first match was against Norwich, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, from the jump, I said, there's something different about this Liverpool side. They're going to do it. Everyone called me crazy. Everyone called me mad. Fellow Liverpool fans called me mad as well. But I just knew. And if not for your fans, because I feel like your fans are unbearable. They're so unbearable.
You haven't seen anything yet. This has just been the warm-up.
But it's like, I find it very refreshing that your team's finally getting that recognition by winning the league, because a lot of fans, especially Chelsea fans and Man United and Man City fans, can say, oh, but you've never won the league before. But you are better than that, you know? Like, I've seen your team last season. I thought you were better than Man City last season. Don't get me wrong, Man City were phenomenal. I enjoyed watching Liverpool more than I enjoyed watching Man City last season. Call me crazy, but I did.
I am crazy.
But I enjoyed watching Mane. I enjoyed watching Salah. I enjoyed learning about what Firmino's role in that Liverpool squad is. Do you know? Like, it's just not a conventional team that I've seen before that wins the league. Like,
I hear you. If Ollie was here, he would be killing me now, because he always got to compare people's comparisons, but I'm going to do it anyway.
When Tottenham got closer, they fell off, is what you're going to say?
No, but that's a good one. No, but if City do the treble, have they had a better season than Liverpool?
No, I can't say that. I think Liverpool have been, I think people have got to have better memories than that of how Liverpool have been consistent throughout the whole season. And it wouldn't be a real treble.
Three cups, including a European
It wouldn't
cup.
Be a real treble. It would be a fake treble. You don't include the Carling Cup in your treble. You know what I mean? So, no, absolutely not. And the thing is, City have been well below par. There's always these teams that, towards the end of the season, come and achieve something. And, oh, yeah, we finished second above your third. That means we had a better season. No, you didn't. I'm sorry. Man City can't say they've had a better season. There's a lot that Man City need to look at and go again. And I hope they will. I hope Pep will come and will stay, and I hope he will go over distance and try to compete. But yeah, Man City have got a lot, and they seem to be on the sliding scale, because I don't know how they're going to motivate themselves to stay in the top four based on this this ban. And you could see that. I kind of feel, you know, credit to United for getting the win yesterday, but I kind of feel if City have something to play for, they get the win yesterday. But I don't think, I just don't see that hunger in them anymore.
Well, I mean, I think it was Neil used the word earlier on, broke. Do you think that Klopp, to some degree, has broken Pep?
Oh,
absolutely.
Because he's put, Pep has been so good. And I think last year, what City did was phenomenal. Yeah. And the year before, but for 2 years, it was absolutely insane. I think people, because Liverpool are so good now, or so much better now, you kind of quickly forget how good City were. 100 points is a madness. Especially coming from behind, because they were behind you for most of the season as well. But Klopp has outdone him, I would say now. Do you think he's broken him? And what motivation do you think he'll have next season?
I don't think he's broken Pep individually, but he broke the team, which I guess you could say is kind of breaking Pep in a way. But I think Pep will have the hunger. Pep will be back. I have no doubt in my mind that Pep will want to prove something next year, especially if they are at the Champions League as well.
I think there's a Klopp thing where Klopp comes to Liverpool and he knows Guardiola's on his way. And there's only two managers really in the league who've been in leagues with Pep before he gets to Man City. One's Mourinho, whose head's gone, and the other one is the other one is Klopp. And Klopp, if you look at every decision Klopp makes from the minute he arrives at Liverpool through the lens of, at some point I'm going to have to beat a Pep Guardiola team that could get 100 points, everything makes sense. So when we didn't buy Van Dijk in the summer and everyone said he's got to get a centre-half, Klopp was like, there's only one centre-half because I've got to get 100 points. There's only one I can get and I need that one, so I'll wait. And if you look at every decision he makes, he ends up with Loris Karius in goal, which cost us the European Cup final in one sense, though I think Madrid probably would have won that game anyway with the Salah injury. But all that said, you end up in a situation where he was like, I need the right goalkeeper. And then he goes and spends $62 million on the right goalkeeper. You know, it's really interesting how I think Klopp has made a load of decisions around recruitment, around his planning, around every bit of focus. Is at some point this fella, because he's that good, will get 100 points. So to beat him, we've got to be able to get 108. And that's what Liverpool, that's what he's built Liverpool to do. And I think that that's what's different. And I think that, to be fair, Klopp knew what Guardiola was and has had a run at him. And he's had a run at him and he's done him. Now Guardiola can see what Klopp is and he'll be planning himself, how do I have a run at this fella? And I think everyone's just lucky to be living in a time with these two managers going toe-to-toe in this way, and everyone else has got to learn from them.
Frank's around as well.
And Frank's around as well, yeah. But everyone's got to look at them and learn from them, and then from there, by looking at them, because the thing about Klopp and Guardiola is, and one of the reasons why there isn't a new Guardiola or there isn't a new Klopp, is because they're so open-minded. Everyone laughed when Liverpool got the throwing coach thing in, and everyone who was an old grey-bearded white fella decided that it was a ridiculous thing to do. Steve Nichols was still ranting and raving about it two weeks ago. Like, it was like, what on earth's this fella done? Like, you know, it was this idea, though, that, well, I can learn one thing. If we get one thing out of this fella, if we learn one thing, if we're better at one thing, well, isn't that a bonus? Haven't we all improved? And it's much more than one thing. The fella's a set-piece expert. Mm. And it's that idea that Klopp and Guardiola, the thing about them is they don't think they've got all the answers. And even now, they still don't. There isn't that sort of predominant ego. Even with someone like Guardiola, who's in such pursuit of perfection, he's always looking for the new thing. Mm. And what he's not going to become, I don't think, is jaded and old. I think if he felt he was jaded and old, he'd just stop doing it. Whereas certain managers, so the younger breed of managers need to look at that and learn from that and say, how do we learn everything? Mm. How do we stay so open-minded that there's always someone who can teach us something new? Mm. And Klopp and Guardiola have had that with each other. You look now, Manchester City and Liverpool actually play football in a relatively similar manner, whereas you go back years, Guardiola played a certain way, Klopp played all heavy metal football. That's not the case now. Mm. Liverpool can play six different ways. Yeah. Liverpool got centre-halves playing through balls to Sadio Mane at the weekend that are absolutely sumptuous, and he sticks it into the back of the net. You know, Liverpool can go at the weekend, Liverpool for the first time in ages put Salah on one touchline and Mane on the other to make the pitch huge, which is the way City use their wide players. Liverpool have had a couple of issues attacking recently, so they've done something a bit different, maybe ahead of Atletico, and it's as though Klopp's thought, well, what does that fella do? I'll do a bit of that. Let's see if that shakes it up. It's not this idea that it's my way or the highway. And also, you know, I know there's no one here who supports United, but that's also what Ferguson was brilliant at. Ferguson would go through assistant managers like no one's business. Right, I've learned everything I can from this fella. He's gone.
Next one.
Learned everything I can from this fella. Quiroz left and got to come back because Ferguson felt he could get more out of him. Not because of the big I am. How dare you? You know, everyone would have thought Ferguson would be, how dare you walk away on me? The opposite. This fella's great. I can get loads out of him. Let's get him in. And I think that at times, you know, you look at the way a lot of, as I say, those old stale English managers like Allardyce talk about themselves. They talk about themselves like, I've got all the answers, I can turn up, I can make it happen, I'll make it rain. And then, but the reality is that you look at the way Klopp and Guardiola handle themselves, it's no, there's more to learn, there's more to know, there's more to plan.
How much work is there for City to do in the summer to catch the Liverpool team? Because I mean, I think it's potentially five players they got to sign.
Five players?
I think so. I think they need a new
three centre halves.
Yeah. I think they need two full backs, at least two centre backs.
Two full back, what? On both sides?
I think so. I think Mendy is not the guy. And I don't think Pep's having him anyway. So you need a left back. Kyle Walker. We've never rated Kyle Walker.
No, never.
Even when he was at his peak.
But I kind of feel like if Laporte was fit, it would be a lot closer.
But closer isn't good enough for Pep.
No. But what I think it would be like it was last season.
Neck and neck.
Yeah.
But I would. But then if Liverpool won, if it was closer, but Liverpool won the league, yeah, I think Pep would see that as, well, we still got work to do.
But I'd need to buy four or five players.
I'm personally not so sure that Mendy's good enough. I think they'll buy a left back.
He doesn't like Stones. He doesn't like Otamendi. He's moved Fernandinho there. He can't be sure about him. And there's another clown.
Silva's retiring. You know?
Zinchenko, rubbish.
Oh wow!
I mean, I don't know who they thought, but if they're generally not going to be able to be in the Champions League for 2 years, that actually makes it harder to get those four or five players. Mm-hmm. I don't know, but.
But winning the league next year, if he wants to go up,
if he wants to go,
say Klopp, okay, you've outdone me this year. Watch what I do this summer. What has he got to do to really to match Liverpool? Because the bar now is you can't. You're looking at two defeats and your title's done. You know, that's the bar now. Do you know what I mean? So you've got to be basically perfect.
I think they will be back competing next year
with that
I think
team.
With a few, I don't think it needs the major surgery. I think one or two players. I think they'll be back competing next
this
year.
This is the floor. You're seeing the floor right now, though. I think you're seeing as poor as they can be. You know, they're not going to be this poor again.
Yeah.
So that's important. Also, you know, let's be honest, Liverpool will drop 10 points next season. I mean, it's still really competitive. Liverpool can even have a little bit of transition if they plan it right and still feel as though they can retain the title, but it'll be hard.
It's that psychological thing of being so far behind, which gets you makes you go even worse behind. If City get off to a good start next season, then it could be turned around.
But the difference, I would say, I'll ask you, between that and last season, is that Liverpool psychologically might have been damaged because of being so good yet coming second, but they have players coming into, if not in their peak, to go again next year. City, if what G's saying is true, psychologically thinking, right, we've got to be... They've not got players in their peak. They've not got a peak Aguero. They've not got a peak Fernandinho. Yeah. They've not got a peak, you know, whoever. So
you got a peak De Bruyne.
Okay, but who else? Whereas the Liverpool team was good to go again from last year. They didn't need much additions to do what they're doing now. Mm. Whereas I think City are going to do that. Do you think that they do need 4 or 5 players?
I genuinely agree with you, Jordan. They definitely need. They need a whole back, a new back line, a whole new back line. 100%.
Even get rid of Laporte.
Okay, bring Laporte in, of course, but we've already seen he's a liability. He's been out injured twice already.
He's
a liability. He is. And he being out injured twice in a season as a centre-back is not good enough. I'm so sorry. It's not good enough. Yeah. Because the impact that it's had on City is diabolical. You're telling me that it will be a lot closer with Laporte. That's not good enough.
But you know, to be fair, though, I think the second injury has been caused because they've rushed him back from the first one. I think in trying to, at the time, catch Liverpool, which even then I think it was done, I think they've arguably rushed him back.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So I'm not sure that he's injury prone. I think City have done him dirty.
I guess I'm saying is I think Laporte could be as equally important for City as Van Dijk is for Liverpool.
Absolutely not.
You don't think?
I disagree. 100% I disagree.
Why?
Because for me, with City, with Laporte, Fernandinho really does cover Laporte. He really does. Fernandinho is that stick, is that glue.
In front of him or next to him?
In front of Laporte. Okay. In front of Laporte. Like, if you actually watch City play and you see Fernandinho, he's covering everybody's tracks. And take Fernandinho out of the team, which he's going to be out of the team next season, honestly, which is why they bought Rodri for whatever reason. That is. But it's like... City need I don't want to say a revamp, but they do need a revamp, really and truly. In the midfield, David Silva, he's gone. Okay,
cool. Well, he's retiring, yeah.
He's gone.
Not retiring, but he's leaving the city.
He's leaving. Fernandinho is going to be gone as well. Who else is there? Bernardo Silva.
The Van Dijk thing is that Van Dijk's generational.
You know,
100%. And this is... So I think there are... So for instance, when people talk to me about Koulibaly, I've seen Koulibaly play in the flesh twice and he's good. He's nowhere near Van Dijk.
No.
He's nowhere near Van Dijk. It's night and day. Like, that's the extent to which Van Dijk, I think, is the best in the world at the position he plays. He isn't just the best in the world at the position he plays. He's the best in the world at the position he plays by a distance. And I think I like Laporte. I think Laporte's a really good player. I think Joe Gomez, for instance, for us, is another excellent central defender. I think there are other good central defenders around, but there is Van Dijk, then there's a massive gap, then there's everybody else. And I think that because Laporte's been out, it's been easy for Titi to say, well, the woes are about Laporte. He can see the 2 goals against Tottenham with Laporte in the team. I think I'm right in saying at the start of the season, you know, there are issues there in general. But even if Laporte sorts it, he still needs to get at least another 2. So you're suddenly talking about 2 central defenders, possibly 3. And then, you know, because he doesn't fancy Stones, he doesn't fancy Otamendi, and Fernandinho is Fernandinho at this stage of proceedings. I'm surprised. The one thing I'm surprised he hasn't done is have a look at Kyle Walker at centre-half this season. Maybe he's just felt it's too mad because he hasn't got Laporte next to him. But, you know, this is a lad who's got pace on the turn. He's 6 foot tall. He's good in the air. He defends the last ball pretty well. But then the flip side of that is I think Cancelo's a mad purchase because he's an old school, wants to overlap fullback. And the way City play the fullbacks is that when they have the ball, the fullbacks become dual sixes. The 2 centre-halves sit, the fullbacks become dual sixes, everyone else goes up 10 yards. And Cancelo, I know it's a state against United, he was like, wanted to make a run outside Foden. And it was like, Foden was going, lads, go and sit there. And I was like, oh, that's where you're meant to be. And he's like, really? That just seems really strange. But that's what he does. And, you know, I won. The really strange thing still for City is the recruitment, because it doesn't entirely always feel like it suits Guardiola's wants and needs. How on earth Zinchenko is still starting left back in the Manchester derby is beyond me. Sure, why is that not being sorted out?
Well, me and Josh had an argument on one of the early games where I was saying, I mean, they've not lost the league because they've not got a good left back. But for me, at the start of the season, left back was a position that for me was like, you know, Mendy doesn't play any games. Who was the backup left back? It was
Delph. They sent Delph to Everton because they couldn't get him fit.
Delph left. There was somebody else there that I just thought you need a left back.
The Marcelo lads that he got from PSV, who they'd sent out and they had a buyback on and they brought him back. Okay. And they've sent him out again in January because he's clearly had a look at him and gone, he's crap.
It was just an obvious thing for me. But a couple of quick ones and we'll move on. Same question about Liverpool. What do Liverpool need to do this summer to ensure that they're on game? And is there anybody that you would in that 11 actually sell for the betterment of the team next season?
Not necessarily for the betterment of the team, but for the idea of shaking it up. So I think you've got to be aware about shaking it up from a Liverpool point of view, because you don't want to get stale around everyone. I think they very much do need to add a fourth option that's as close to the class of the front three as possible, because I think that you just need to have a sub. And by that, I don't mean that you get one lad in whose job it is just to be a sub, but you share the games that get played by a front three just across four. So when there is talk of Timo Werner for a certain price, it really appeals, because I think he could play left or central. Mane can play anywhere along the line. Firmino's flexible, and Salah does just want to play nine in an ideal world.
There's a lot of talk I've heard about, well, from Liverpool fans saying that we would sell Salah. How do you feel about that?
I thought he would sell Salah this summer, but I wasn't happy about it. I thought he would go this summer, but
someone just gone.
No, this one coming.
Oh, coming. Okay.
But I think that I thought if he won the league, I thought he'd go. But I just think that Real Madrid are such a bag of rags, and Barcelona just aren't sure what they're about. That I think it's actually difficult now if you're Salah to make a case for you to leave for your own interests. Your interests are better served at Liverpool currently. So with them, where is it? It doesn't feel like it's going to be Bayern Munich anytime soon. It doesn't feel like it's Juventus. Yeah. So you end up being not quite sure. So I now think Salah will stay, though. I did think he would go. And Liverpool would use the money for someone like a Sancho or something like that. The one who I think will leave and I wouldn't be averse to, even though I like him a great deal, I think he's been so important to us, is Wijnaldum. He's got 1 year left and I think he's got one more big contract in him, and I don't think Liverpool are going to offer him the sort of wage he'd want. So it then becomes whether or not he wants to hang on and do the season, leave on a free. But I wouldn't necessarily, if Wijnaldum was desperate to go or was desperate to go and earn £250,000 a week somewhere, which he could, he'd have his pick of Europe's clubs, including Barcelona. I wouldn't stand. I wouldn't. Yeah, he comes in as a Champions League and Premier League winner. I think he would pretty much be able to come in and I think a lot of clubs would say I wouldn't mind some of that, because he's so neat and tidy, he's so versatile, he looks after it really well. He's the sort of player who ends up at Juventus in a year's time on £300,000 a week, and he does really well there, and everyone says he's succeeded. So I think he gets a big contract somewhere that Liverpool just may not want to give him at this stage, and then that opens up a berth either for someone like Keita or Oxlade-Chamberlain to step up if they can stay fit, or for Liverpool to go and recruit. And because I think what Liverpool don't want to get stuck into, I mean, the average age of this Liverpool side is 26.5, and I know what you say about peak years, but it doesn't take much for peak years to be 6 to 12 months away from being just about to be not quite over the hill, but you're carrying one too many
on your way down
at a certain age, because all the front three now are 28.
Okay.
All the front three now are 28. Now they're not like a Rooney 28, where they've got 12 years of elite football on the clock and it's absolutely done them in. They haven't all got that, but they are all 28. So they're the idea to get of bringing one in who's younger, who can challenge them a little bit, let Origi go, say, and then have your bench option be someone like Werner, who's 23, 24, who can spend 6 months bedding in and getting himself sorted. I think it'd be really, really valuable. And I think just the succession planning now at Liverpool is going to be really interesting. They brought Minamino in January, and I think that's quite a tidy little move. But exactly where he gets his position, and also maybe have a think about changing the shape, because you can't keep asking fullbacks to do what we ask our fullbacks to do in terms of the intensity, the miles covered, how integral they are. I think you can have that as a go-to, but if you try to pull that for another season, you know, where if the Euros happen and Alexander-Arnold goes and plays, which he should, then he's, you know, let's say he comes back August, doesn't feel 100%. Yeah. We get to September, his hamstring goes, he's out for 3 months. What are we meant to do?
Yeah.
And so I think Liverpool do need to think about, you know, maybe having another shape to go to. So I think a lot of this is just about freshness. So yeah, things should be done. Genuinely, things should be done. If we want to, we can afford a little bit of a dip, I think, but to stay, you know, completely competitive for the two major honours that we want to win every single season, I think we can definitely look at adding one or two to that squad.
And just finally, back to my initial question, you answered it talking about kind of Corona and the impact.
Yeah, yeah.
But what I actually meant was, does it matter how Liverpool win the league in terms of play? because in the last handful of games, you've not been playing particularly well. Is it important that you finish the season playing well as champions, if only for just, you know, for the momentum for the next season? Or again, could you not
no,
give
I,
a shit?
I actually think there's a converse to that, which I think one of the things that's done City in is they've took 198 points across two seasons. They didn't need to get 100 points in season one. Fair play to them, it's a brilliant achievement. But I think there's a really strong there's actually, you know, this is Jurgen Klopp who insisted that they weren't playing against Shrewsbury. There's a part of me that if we went out against Atletico and we won the league against Palace, there's a part of me that genuinely wouldn't be surprised if he sent some players on holiday for a month. He talks constantly about players getting a break, a physical and a mental break. He's obsessed with it. They play too much football. If there is nothing left to play for this season, genuinely, if he sent Mohamed Salah on holiday for a month, I wouldn't think that was mad. Well, I would, but I wouldn't think it was unlike Jurgen Klopp. He wants them to have breaks. Now, it might be that Mohamed Salah would say, no, I want to finish the season as top scorer. This is what I'm here to do. This is my job. But it genuinely wouldn't surprise me if he looked to literally pull them down a level, if he wanted them to taper off into the summer and into the international break. That's what Klopp's about, and he talks obsessively about footballers getting breaks. I think it's one of his biggest things, and he was obsessed that they were going to get that 2-week break at all costs. So honestly, I know it sounds like an extreme point and an extreme example, but if, for instance, Alexander-Arnold was told that Nico Williams comes through, the 18-year-old Welsh lad, and he's going to play all the league games from now until the end of the campaign, you know, feel free to go and look after yourself a little bit. Go and sit on a beach for 2 weeks. I wouldn't think that was unlike Jurgen Klopp. I think it's unlike Premier League managers in general, but I wouldn't think it was unlike Jurgen Klopp.
And finally, just you two, because this player I'm about to mention has played for your club as well, Daniel Sturridge. Start with you, G, on this one. Yeah. He's been banned from football for 4 months for breaching betting rules. I don't want to talk so much about what he's been banned for, though this may come up in your answer, but is there something about Daniel Sturridge that people just don't seem to like? Does he get a bit of bad press, a bit of bad PR unjustly, or is there something about him that you understand why it seems people have some agenda towards him?
He's always had this PR having a bad attitude around him, and I don't know, I've never really been able to quantify whether it was justified or not. Apparently it was a part of the, well, you know, you got noises out of City when he left City to come to us that they had it, although you wonder whether that's sour grapes because he didn't stay with them. Definitely, I remember Ray Wilkins talk, and Ray Wilkins is the nicest guy ever. And someone asked him directly, like, people say about this thing with Sturridge, does he have a bad attitude? And he said, it's not that he has a bad attitude, it's that he kind of came into a dressing room with a lot of big stars and kind of thought he'd made it already when he came to Chelsea. In media circles, some people will say that's confidence, right? But then it's perceived as a bad attitude in Sturridge's case. And then he went to Liverpool and people said, oh, this is his last chance and all this kind of stuff. And he was brilliant for Liverpool. He was actually, and I think we actually look back at it and regret selling him. So there's a lot of talk about him having a bad attitude, but I don't know where the evidence of it is. You know, I don't know what's the thing which makes him have a bad attitude over any other footballer. Most footballers are arrogant. They need to have that to be able to kind of survive in this industry. I don't know.
Especially flair players.
And strikers particularly, because if you miss a chance, you know, I've seen them step up and say, you know, even when Firmino first came to Liverpool, that he still thinks he's the best finisher at Liverpool, but he should think he's the best finisher at Liverpool, right? I don't know. He probably was. Yeah. So I don't know what it is. I can't give a firm answer, and therefore I'm not going to subscribe to the idea, because there are a lot of people who get a bad attitude shirt on their back and they can't get rid of it no matter what they do.
I don't want to be that guy that perpetuates this bad attitude kind of thing, because we don't know these people. And I think, as G says as well, I've not seen any kind of overt examples of that made me say, oh yeah, that wasn't really cool. But do you think that there's a justified tag or kind of stench around Sturridge? Have you seen anything about him at his time at Chelsea and at Liverpool that makes you think, yeah, I kind of get it?
Honestly, no. Like, I look back at Sturridge's years at Chelsea especially. That guy was sidelined for a long time and he was pretty graceful about it. So I look at it and I'm just like, where's all of this actually coming from, you know? His City years as well, I personally never heard anything when he came from City. I didn't hear it. So and maybe it is bad PR, I don't know. But I look at Sturridge and I look at him like, oh my God, we could be friends, you know? Like, that's my dog, you know? I don't see anything that can perpetuate to bad attitude, or I'm sure Neil, you'll be able to tell us because he was
I love
Liverpool.
Him deeply and profoundly. Yeah. Well, like I'd like him to come back and play the last six games, and I'd like him to get a medal.
Yeah.
Well, I was going to just ask you because he was at Liverpool last in his country. I don't think Pep Klopp intended this on purpose. Doesn't make sense. Intended this, but I think when he was talking out about how he didn't play for the pain barriers and sometimes he needed to learn what real pain was, I think he said that about him. That, I think, gave the media a very big hook to subscribe the whole, oh, we see you with Klopp saying it, yep, I knew it was a bad apple. And I don't think that was Klopp's intention, but do you sense that that kind of really gave him the stamp of...
Yeah, I think...
The bad apple stamp.
I think Klopp's point was, well, Daniel stopped sprinting. When he was at Liverpool, he stopped sprinting. He just basically... I mean, there was a pre-season friendly we played against Bayern Munich and Sturridge gets through, runs at Manuel Neuer. I think Neuer's still in goal for Munich. I might be wrong at the time because it's a pre-season friendly. He might have gone off. And Sturridge just finishes brilliantly. And in the act of sprinting through and finishing brilliantly, he pulls a muscle. Mm. Literally pulls a muscle in a pre-season game as he scores. And genuinely, it's one of the most tragic things I've ever seen on a footy pitch because it looked like Daniel loved his body. It looked like he was back in his physicality. And... You know, there's been a couple of times since where you've thought this is, you know, every now and again you'll see him open up and you'll think brilliant, and then all of a sudden it'll betray him underneath him. So I think it's the sort of thing that managers say because they can see a player's playing within himself, and I think that Daniel has been playing within himself for a while. Like I think, for instance, if Daniel had got on in the final in Madrid and we'd have needed a goal, then I think you'd have seen him sprint. Because it would have been, well, it's all or nothing. This is it. This is my life. This is my. But he wasn't going to do it for you in September when you're playing him in the League Cup. And as a manager, I can see why that might be a little bit frustrating. But I don't think that's an attitude thing. And I think that one of the things I'd say about Sturridge at Liverpool is the young players loved him. And he was great with the young players, in certain games, talking people through moments. You'd see him do it on the pitch. I think he's if I sit down and think about emotional connections I've had with Liverpool players, like Sturridge's top three. I absolutely adore Daniel and think of him really quite often. In a way that's far too genteel. I imagine us going for a lovely time around Liverpool one. Maybe occasionally holding hands, but don't make it mucky. Do you know what I mean? This is courtly.
I mean,
this
to affection. Be fair, you are making it.
No, I'm not making it mucky. I'm not the one making it mucky. This is courtly. You know what I mean? This isn't. You know, we don't need to have physical contact. We just have to stare at one another. And
because that's not mucky, is it?
No. It's just staring, mate. But he's just genuinely. He was a phenomenal footballer. 13-14. Everyone talks about Suarez. We win the first three games that season 1-0. Sturridge scores in all three. He scores a goal against Aston Villa, which is just incredible. He scores against Manchester United, a header from 4 yards, goes ballistic, goes absolutely insane. You tell me he doesn't care about Liverpool Football Club, absolutely loves the place. I think one of his problems is just in general on the attitude front. I genuinely think there's something in identity around him, and it's part of the problem is he's from Birmingham. And I think if he'd have been from Manchester or been from London, Chelsea, or been from Liverpool, then I think all the conversation would be different. If he'd have played once for a hometown club and been able to voice as the hometown person. But since he's left Liverpool, he said he'd do anything for the club. He said he'll sell the hot dogs. Mm-hmm. And that, suggests he's found somewhere. He was genuinely one of the best things about being in the stadium in Madrid to watch the trophy celebrations was seeing Daniel with the trophy, because he's been part of that. He was part of that journey that got us back in the Champions League, part of playing different games, and you could see what it meant to him, genuinely meant to him. He got a Champions League winner's medal, and he scored last season against Paris Saint-Germain in our first Champions League game. He gets a goal. He plays his part. He doesn't get 30 or anything like that. He's not Sadio Mane by that point, but he basically can't run. And it's not like he left with any degree of bad blood. His statement, Klopp's statement when he left, they could not have been warmer. Everyone went out of the way to say how fantastic he was, and for me that's the measure of him.
I hear that. Right, let's move on now, guys. Let's talk about football, whether we think it's getting better. Start with UG. So many things that there seems to have been so many changes within our lovely game in the last say handful of years, and some would say has made the game better to watch, better to go to, better to interact and engage with. Some would disagree. Overall, some of the changes, and I've got a list of some of them here, but do you think that football as a game and as an industry, because they're two separate things, is better than what it was 5-10 years ago?
No, I don't think so. Although it's Liverpool fans will probably say, well, that's because you were winning at that point.
But I would too, to be fair.
But I mean, if you kind of you sent this question for, and I kind of thought about it, and I thought, well, I'm paying the same amount of money to see Mason Mount and Ross Barkley as I was to see in Didier Drogba and Michael Ballack. It doesn't quite quite equate. But I'm guessing you're talking about things like VAR, which I'd say...
So I've got VAR, yeah. The amount of money that's in the game, rules, slight tweaks to rules. I've also got here a number of games. So there's more and more games now than there was 5, 10 years ago.
Is that a good thing or a bad thing? None of them have actually improved the quality. I think we get what we get over Christmas where, you know, we're getting this winter break, but what we got was the same amount of games in the Christmas period. Actually, one more game extra, I think it was. Mm. And I think it just made some of those games like really damp squids or like breaking up fixtures where you have like, you know, I like the idea of having most of the fixtures on one day and having a full match of the day. I enjoyed that. You don't really... There's some weeks you just don't get that no more. You're getting
four games,
average games over every single day. I don't want to see that. So no, VAR definitely hasn't. More games definitely hasn't. The ironic thing about more money is you'd think for more money you get better quality players, but I think the rest of Europe have just seen, well, these guys have got more money, we're going to charge them top dollar for our average players, so we don't necessarily even get the best players for that either. And the more money is not actually equating to better value for the fan in terms of how much you pay and in terms of what you're seeing on the pitch as well.
I mean, sorry to cut you there, but you say we're not getting, you know, value for money in terms of the quality of player we're getting, but you could argue this league has the best defender in the world. You could argue the keeper has the best keeper in the world. You could argue this league has in Kane the best centre forward in the world.
I disagree with that.
Of course you would.
But that one wasn't it. Real draft. I felt honestly, I was thinking he's going all right here. Oh God, he's got a JCB in to dig this one out.
Well, De Bruyne now the best midfielder in the world. So I'm, just saying.
Yeah, I mean. What in terms of how
best managers in the world,
the Premier League has become more competitive by over apart from Liverpool and City, the quality actually coming down. The race for the top four was a lot harder 10 years ago.
You see, the thing about that is that's something that someone who's currently a Chelsea supporter would say. And my point here is that it's true this season to say that Tottenham, Arsenal, Chelsea, and Man United are all significantly poorer than they'd like to be, but Leicester, Wolves, Sheffield United,
they're all better,
and they've all got really good players. I mean, I think Jimenez. Yeah. We talk about. I think, you know, you want to have a chat about centre forwards. I think Raúl Jiménez is absolutely tremendous, a terrific footballer. You know, Traore is about as exciting as it gets. They've got Ruben Neves in there. Bowley's a lovely player. Goalkeeper's the business. Leicester, similarly, you know, there's quality right the way through that Leicester side. It wouldn't take much to improve it again markedly. So I think one of the things that's happened is that it's I think it is ridiculously difficult because you look at, for instance, even Norwich, Buendia, lovely player, really good little footballer. Pukki's got goals in him. Cantwell's a decent player. It's tough to get a result against Norwich. Now, most teams have, but the point is they have by graft.
Yeah.
Very few people are getting thumped, and the reason why is because, you can go right the way down that league. Southampton, really good side. Can't be bothered playing them. They'll run you into the ground. You keep going right the way through. Zaha splits opinion, but there's a period of time where he's been rated as a 70 million footballer. He's playing for Crystal Palace. You know, they're rubbish, but they're not actually. They'll give you the game, they'll make it hard for you. And what that means is there's the cliche of there's no easy games in the Premier League. 10 years ago that wasn't true. There were easy games for Liverpool, Chelsea, Manchester United and Arsenal. They had easy games a lot of the time. I remember teams coming to Anfield, they get beat 2-0, we'd score one goal in the 35th minute, one in the 62nd minute. We wouldn't play that well, we'd all go home. Now, you know, West Ham come to Anfield and score two against us the other week. Mikel Antonio is downright unplayable at times. And it doesn't look like he's going to get picked up by anybody. He's just going to stay at West Ham being terrific when on his day. So I think the standard is, what's happened is that standard's increased. And the standard of the four sides who are struggling this season's dipped, granted.
Yeah. But in terms of you being a fan, a pure football fan, do you want, because you've mentioned they have some good players, and they're definitely some good players, but also there is an element of teams, like you said, make it difficult. But I don't think necessarily making it difficult makes it a better spectacle for the fans.
No, I think that's fair, but I think that people were trying, like I remember sides coming to Anfield again 10 years ago where they were trying to make it difficult, they just couldn't do it. And they just sit 10 men behind the ball and just look for scraps and set pieces. Now, I think we're beyond that. I think, you know, playing Burnley is different to playing Southampton, is different to playing West Ham, is different to playing Leicester, is different to playing Wolves in a way that I don't think 10 years ago that was true. 10 years ago, Mark Hughes is managing, Allardyce is managing. You're just getting different slices of the same pie. Now, I think you can go game to game. Suddenly, some lads are playing three at the back. In the Wolves, Sheffield United instance, some other groups of players are playing. You know, as I say, what Burnley did to Tottenham first half, you try and find an equivalent budgetary difference from 10 years ago, and you're looking at substandard footballers. You're not looking at Dwight McNeil. Dwight McNeil's been bought and he's playing for someone else by that point because Burnley have got the budget to be able to hang on to McNeil at this stage, and Leicester are a prime example of it. I mean, the other stuff, what's really interesting is you say you're paying the same money. Yeah. That's really interesting because inflation is a thing, so you're actually paying less. I think because like prices have been frozen for 5-6 years for most clubs now for ticket prices, which I think is interesting. I think that footballers are closer to football supporters than they were 10-15 years ago. Really? I think, yeah, in terms of, in ways around the way in which, obviously social helps with this, but they're better able to communicate who they are as people. Mm. I feel, and it's not just because this is a good Liverpool side, I love the Liverpool side of 08-09, you know, but one of the best things about it was seeing Xabi Alonso in a bar one night and chatting to Xabi Alonso for 5 minutes, but there's different ways to do that now, but also footy players, I think, are less media managed and they're more able to be themselves and communicate who they are. I think that, yeah, I think they're smarter in the media management, but what I mean by that is they're able to put out who they are as people a lot more than 10 years ago. It would have been, he just doesn't answer any questions or it's all through club media channels and it's all really safe. Yeah. Now you've got people doing the Players Tribune stuff where they're able to speak in their voice and say, this is who I am as a person and look at me as a footballer. And I think that that's a real benefit. I think you'll always argue about over quality, and a lot of it's basically what you're paying for through the gate yourself. Mm. So you're right to say, well, Didier Drogba was firstly a great lad and secondly a terrific footballer. So of course, you know, Didier Drogba's boss. Yeah. So, you know, you'll always have that. But I think in general, I do think it is a little better. And I also think like stuff around the game's a little bit better. I just think in general, you know, you can get a better tea. Which counts, doesn't it?
not as a team man myself, but I'll take your word for it.
I mean, the meal, the evening meal. You get a better evening meal.
Oh, yeah.
You get a better meal of food.
Oh, sorry. Tea is in the northern tea. Sorry. Yeah, we're in London now, so yeah.
Sorry.
Southern softies.
Anita, what do you think? Do you think football now is better than it? And again, a difference between the game and the industry. Do you think it's better than what it was even 5 years ago?
I think I'm pretty much a double-edged sword on this one because I genuinely do feel like the quality of the Premier League has dipped significantly. You look at 10 years ago, you had all like the top four teams that had the biggest names in the world. You had Robin Van Persie, you had, who else do you have? You have Drogba, you had
Cristiano Ronaldo.
You had all these big players.
Yeah, but again, I would counter that. I think that if, you know, City have got Aguero, Arsenal have got Aubameyang,
but
Tottenham have got
is,
Kane. I mean, you've got Abraham.
Aubameyang?
No, don't disrespect Aubameyang. Don't do that.
Aubameyang. But Barcelona, mate, respect.
At the same time, you had teams having three or four players like that. You know, like you're naming like one player from each team. Back in the day, I can name for my team. I can name Michael Essien. I can name Michael Ballack. I could name Didier Drogba, Kalou, Malouda. Like, teams wanted them. Anelka. A lot of teams wanted these people to come to their teams. You don't get that now.
But hang on, but haven't you then just maybe flipped with Liverpool of 10 years ago? Because 10 years ago, they were the Chelsea now in that they might have had one or two great players.
I said the difference
that's
is,
you now.
Is Liverpool have built up players. And Liverpool built up, you know, players on their way up. You know, I think, you know, Chelsea had almost like a, you know, a dream team of players. And I think Liverpool have a lot. You look at Liverpool's midfield, like it's very functional. But you wouldn't have said that no one would get into
them, you know.
Yeah, you wouldn't have swapped any of Chelsea's midfield for Liverpool's midfield of 2005.
Who's on midfield that year?
So if we said like Essien, Lampard, and Makalele, you would have swapped that for.
Tell you what, Thiago's getting away with murder here.
Yeah, I'm thinking, hang on a minute. I mean,
would you?
I saw a lot of Good Johnson.
Yeah. I like Good Johnson.
Good Johnson's a good
he
player.
Was amazing.
Yeah. And he does well at Barcelona. But we're glossing over. We do this thing where we act like those players. We act like these players play together every week. And we've done this recently at Liverpool. I reckon there's probably about 10 games Makalele, Essien, and Lampard all play together in total.
But it's the quality of them.
That's another
players.
Level.
No, but I would say Liverpool's midfield five or six is maybe on par.
No.
Hell no.
No,
absolutely not. Come on, Jordan.
Because I'd even say, because you mentioned Thiago. Thiago was a flipping good player.
I really liked Thiago. I thought he was tidy, but what we do is we confuse tidiness with absolute brilliance. Yeah. So one of the things I like about the other, like, for instance, I think SCN.
No, he was not.
I think SCN. I loved SCN. I thought SCN was brilliant, but one of the things he was first and foremost was tidy and functional. Mm-hmm. I mean, if ever there's an essence of a really good functional midfielder, it's SCN. Mm-hmm. Makalele was functional. I mean, he was pure function. He lived for function. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I mean, but what we then do is we get to look back at them and cover them in gold, and I'll be doing this in 10 years and slaughtering some poor lads who are playing for Liverpool now, saying they're nowhere near as good as those lads from 10 years ago.
What, SCN versus Genie Wijnaldum?
Come on,
no contest, is it?
I think that Genie would love turning away from a Mikel Essien thunderbolt tackle that he sees coming from a mile away as he shimmies to one side.
I think
Fabinho plays up until before his injury this season. I think Fabinho plays sixth best than Makalele did.
What?
In that, I think his range of passing, his dynamism, he's got his ability to go past people.
He's one of my three favourite players in the league. I love Fabinho.
He's really struggled since he's come back. Yeah, but he's
Makalele had a role named after him.
By you lot.
No, by everyone.
He did, but that's partially because of that explosion and us all talking about tactics more, because Mourinho and Benitez come in. Ronnie Whelan was doing what Makalele was doing in 1987. Oh, we can go down all of this.
Gilberto Silva did that wrong.
Yep, Gilberto Silva
did not do that wrong.
Manu Petit. The idea that you'd have two centre midfielders and one of them sits and the other one goes.
Oh, revolutionary.
is genuinely for the birds. So, but on all this. But no, but it's fine because that. But this is what. But no, but this is basically where you're. It's really interesting because Jordan's got you on your two Chelsea supporters. And he's basically saying, so your golden age 10 years ago, footy's better now, isn't it? And you're going, no, shut up.
I did put the Chelsea disclaimer in earlier.
The best centre forward I ever saw was Didier Drogba, which could well be true.
But again, it's subjective because you're a Liverpool fan.
Yeah, yeah.
Exactly, you're a Liverpool fan. You've got like the best players in the world right now.
Yeah.
Exactly. We had the best players in the world 10 years ago, so we can both arguably say
exactly
right now.
And that's the thing. The one thing I'd say is my argument is that basically I can genuinely do all the comparisons. I don't know who you're. Raul Jimenez of 2007 is. I don't know who your Adama Traore of 2007 is. I don't know who your James Maddison of 2007 is, because all the best players play for the top four sides. Mm-hmm. And even then, a comparison is Cristiano Ronaldo spent 3 years, well, his life, but 3 years desperate to go to Real Madrid, because Real Madrid were a bigger deal than Manchester United. They just were to Cristiano Ronaldo.
They were, whereas
right now, I don't see. You know, the only way in which players are queuing up to leave City, which they might do in the summer, is if the ban's upheld. But you know, Raheem Sterling, if that ban isn't upheld, will be perfectly happy to stay at City. And Sterling's a wonderful footballer. He's just having a bad time.
True that. Final. I want to just get our final one in very briefly because we're running over already. Norwich. I found quite an interesting case study this year in terms of, you know, sticking to principles versus getting the job done to stay in the league or achieve your objectives. And it's looking like they're gonna be relegated this season.
Yeah.
And I remember having Stephen, a Liverpool fan, on the pod, I think it was first pod of the season, and he was saying he thought it was ridiculous that, this was after the Liverpool win against Norwich, the first game of the season, ridiculous that Norwich played the way they played. And there was a lot of reports of Norwich continuing how they played in the Championship here. And you can't do that in the Prem. You've got to change in the Prem. It's not the Championship. And they've clearly not listened to that. They've clearly decided to stick to how they want to play their football, even if it means going down. And I just wonder, I'll start with you, Nisa, if you commend that approach to achieving your objectives, do you think it's more important to have your style and have your beliefs in what you want to achieve? Or do you think it's about, well, our objective is this, we may have to go against what I want to do to achieve this?
I commend Norwich to an extent because, again, they have been crapping out matches. Like, they've been losing by like one goal for quite a long time during the first half of the season. They were always losing by like one goal, and you'll see their quality of play and you'll just think, how could you lose this match type thing? But at the same time, again, you are coming to the Premier League, you're coming to a completely different league, one of the best leagues in the world. You have to learn to adapt, you have to learn to change. Like, every single manager that has come to the Premier League, this is just from a manager perspective, not from a team perspective, but every single manager has had to change their style of play. I'll use Sarri for an example. Sarri had to come to the Premier League. He had to learn the hard way. the way he's playing is not correct for Chelsea, so he has to change it, especially for the Premier League. With Norwich, it's the same principle. You all come into the Premier League, it's so competitive, the pressure is so high. You look at Wolves, the way they came into the Premier League, the way they turned things around for themselves. They didn't necessarily change the style of play, but they changed the mentality. They brought new players in as well.
That's what I think is different about Wolves. Wolves didn't change because they didn't have to, because they had Premier League players, whereas Norwich don't have an abundance of Premier League players. So,
yeah.
I mean, change style, do you mean be more defensive, keep more clean sheets? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, 100%. I'm a big Mourinho stan. Yeah, for real. I'm a big Mourinho stan when it comes to when you need to defend, you defend. As in, you're playing a big team, you don't go all out. It worked for City, well done, fantastic. It's not going to work for every single team, and it's shown throughout the league.
CG, I don't agree with that, because I feel as a fan, mm-hmm. I think what's happening more and more now, I'm noticing football, is that I think more and more fans, unless you're a fan of a team that wins and competes for the big trophies on a regular basis, everybody else I think is valuing style of play and enjoyment over trophies. So if you're a Norwich fan, an example,
not over trophies. Maybe Arsenal fans might be doing that.
I'll give you an example. I think if you are a Brighton fan, you are genuinely more happier now than you were last year under Chris Hughton.
Yeah, but the results are the same and the football's better.
The football's better, but they may go down this year. But I reckon if you ask a Brighton fan, they would take that over last season.
But they could have almost went down last year as well.
But they didn't. The point I'm making is I think a lot of football fans now value style of play over banking in and maybe getting a 1-0 win.
I mean, yeah, that's true. I what I would say is in Norwich case, I mean, and I was a big fan of Norwich. I'll probably, you know, if you go back to the earlier pods, but since the turn, since the turn of the year, they've been shocking. They've only scored like four goals.
But yet they're not. They can't keep up with the precedent that they've set.
But yet they've never been battered. They've never been battered this year, Norwich. I can't think of many 4-5s.
They're
bottom of the league. Most teams that are bottom of the league, they're holding a couple 4s and 5s.
George, 4 goals.
Yeah, okay. No,
but
it's Norwich.
But they're not. So what I'm saying is the outcome is not achieving. They're not even entertaining. They're not entertaining and they're not getting points.
But I think they are. I would rather watch Norwich than Burnley.
No. I would say they were entertaining at the beginning of the season.
I think even now. They're losing games now, granted.
You still think they're entertaining
now? I think there's large parts of watching Norwich where I'm thinking there's good passage of play, there's good attacking formations, they're trying to move the ball well, they're not lumping it in the box as you would 10 years ago at Bolton or a Stoke or whatever, or Huddersfield. They're still playing good football. Losing, but they're still playing good football.
Jordan, it's not good football if you don't look like you're going to score. I just can't.
No, that's why I disagree with you, because I think they do. They've just not got the striker up front to score the goals.
They've got Pookie.
Well, Pookie's not Kane. Come on, he's not. Pookie's Pookie.
There's a thing where, what was he meant to do? Like, was he meant to literally buy 11 new ones? Because this is where I've got a bit of... Like, he's got the players he's got who are good at what they're good at. Yeah. And they got him up. And sometimes you've got to dance with the person who brought you. And that's what he's done. If you remember Burnley came up the first time under Dyche. Burnley, the reds off, went back down, got stronger, came back up. But that's the Norwich gamble, because they've not given him... Well, he's either not asked for or he's not been given money to spend. He didn't spend anything in the summer. And they made the decision that we stick with our lads, we stick with each other, we stick with you as a manager. We're all going to stick together through this, and we're going to live this little bit of a journey. And for me, the proof of the Norwich pudding is two things. One, what happens in the summer when Cantwell goes, which he will, probably to Leicester if they've got any sense, and then they'll sell Manchester United and the square will be circled and everyone will be happy and Leicester will be better and United will be worse. But when all that happens, they'll need to hold everyone in place, because that's what they need to do it again. And they need to go down to the Championship and do it again. And if they go down to the Championship and do it again, and everyone's got that year experience of the Premier League, and then he buys 3 or 4 to stiffen the sinews, to do the stuff we're talking about, to do the mucky bits, because it's not even like he's gone out and bought a 6'4" centre forward and choosing not to play him. He's not got a defensive enforcer at the back. The goalkeeper might like saving a pen, but if we're all honest about it, he's dreadful.
Yeah, he's not good.
So you're in this situation where you've gone with who's brought you, and they're stuck with that, and you've done that on a budgetary and on a basis of you've invested in other things, and you look after the money, but then it's what happens next, and that's going to be the proof of it. Because if they bounce straight back up again, and then next time the excuse of, well, we just like to play pretty stuff, I'll be going, well, it's competitive sport, lads. I don't know if you know, but there's a score at the end, and that's. But this time, I think if he wasn't going to do 6 signings, if he wasn't going to do what Villa did or what Fulham tried to do the year before, if he wasn't going to go, I've got to get rid of these lads because they can't deal with the physical ardor of the Premier League. If they were, if there was a club decision not to do that, then you can't really put that on the players or the manager. I think that's harsh. And if the club are happy with this, if this is the business plan, that this might happen, but if we get a year, great, and then we change.
And just finally, I guess that's Anita's my point in terms of, I think the fan base, then I've not heard any Norwich fan, there's not a lot of them.
No, they're made up.
They're happy. they know they're probably going down, but yeah, they're happy, not because they're losing every week, because when they pay their money every single Saturday, they know they're going to see, in the main, some decent football, mm-hmm, rather than turning up, ergo Brighton fans last year, Burnley fans in their first season, and just see 90 minutes of dire, and they might scrape a 1-0 from a set piece.
But do you think that's because they think they're lucky to be in the league more than anything else? More than that's really happy with the style of play?
I think Norwich know they're not going to win the Premier League. So if they're not going to win the Premier League or an FA Cup, at least give us good football.
I think they feel like they're part of something. Are the people of Burnley and the people of Norwich substantially different? Almost certainly not.
No.
But the people of Burnley feel like they're part of something and they play the Sean Dyche way. The people of Norwich feel like they're part of something and they play the Daniel Farke way. And I think that whilst everyone feels like they're part of something, you can accept going back down to come back up, because it's a journey that we're all in together. Mm. And that's why the most important thing they can do is keep hold of Farke, because they believe in him and they believe in the journey. If Farke was to disappear and you just went and got, for instance, Chris Hughton back in, and then you play rubbish football, but no one, and maybe you stay up or maybe you don't, but no one believes, then that's different.
Yeah.
They feel like you can almost put the what's this quality of the football conversation a tiny little bit to one side, I think. I think it's whether or not people can identify with what's in front of them. And listen, the best game of football I watched last season was Norwich versus Leeds. It was incredible.
Mm. Okay. We'll see. I think it's interesting, though, that Norwich fans, despite knowing they're going down, they're just
nice people, though.
Yeah.
They are nice people, but I think there's a wider point in that. What do football fans want? If you're not going to be a Liverpool or a Chelsea or Arsenal or a City that win trophies, yeah, more often than not, why are you smoking for? There's a question there, genuinely. Okay, if you're not going to win trophies, what are we paying for?
But I think that varies, George. And I think it's never going to be the same every season. There will be, it depends on the circumstance, there will be some seasons where people just will take 1 point ahead of the relegation zone. That, you know, as things progress, you might, you know, like the Alan Kirbishley thing, for instance. He was getting them solid safe for like 5-6 years. Then they said, no, we want to try and move up. Mm-hmm. I think it's a fluid picture. I don't think it's just the style of play. But if it was just the style of play, Norwich has declined for me, so I don't think that would be enough. That's what I think.
Can I just say, I genuinely think this is very subjective, depending on what fan base you do support. So, like, I've seen you and Neil agree with the fact that you'd rather watch them play good football. Not being funny, like, Liverpool, back in the day, but for me it's back in the day, but like 2012, 2013, you guys were playing good football. You didn't win the league, but you valued the fact that you were playing good football.
No, it's different if you're a big club fan.
Okay, but I'm just talking about the mentality, you know, because me and G, we agree when we come to the fact that we think that Norwich's quality, it has dipped. At the same time, they should have come into the Premier League and they should have done something a bit different with the style of their play. But you value the style of play. For me, as a Chelsea fan, if a manager comes in, changes up the style of play and he gets us somewhere, I prefer that.
But that's because, you know, you've been Mourinho.
Exactly.
You've been Mourinho.
No, I think what's
exactly. A big condition, like, Chelsea are a club, but also I win at any cost.
I love how Burnley play. So this isn't for me. It's not a stylistic thing.
I mean that
set of supporters, that set of players, that hierarchy of a football club and that manager are aligned on a journey.
Yeah.
And that's the same for Burnley. And what I like is, I think that the football club, so for instance, everybody hates everybody else at West Ham, basically, mm-hmm, because we're not aligned in any way, shape or form. And that's the reason why no one's having a nice time at West Ham. Mm-hmm. People are having a better time at Norwich than West Ham, even though West Ham are more likely to stay up. Mm-hmm. The reason why is because they feel aligned. People feel aligned at Burnley in terms of what it is we are at Burnley Football Club and what we're trying to do.
Okay.
And I put the style of play thing almost to one side. It's more, does everyone believe in what we're all trying to achieve here? And okay, whilst the answer to that is yes, then I think that's when football clubs have a nice time. When the answer to that is I don't know or no, that's when people are scratching around for doubt. And one of the things, yeah, Burnley have done brilliantly is they are very, 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 very good at being Burnley. And when they got a bit wobbly around Christmas, people weren't sure if the Burnley thing was the right thing to do, and now they've gone on a good run, got some good results, and everyone feels good about it again, and people are going to football matches feeling great. And I think that's all you can ask is, do we all feel as though we're all aligned in terms of what it is we want? And whether you're at the top of the table or the bottom of the table, I think if you're paying your money and you feel aligned, you have a nice time.
Okay.
Neil, this is probably the last time you'll be on the FFP.
This season?
I will.
Ever. I mean,
I'll congratulate you early now.
There's an active book on whether or not I'm going to pass away in the league title celebrations. You know, they'll be fishing a few results of the Mersey, it might be fair to say. By the way, if you are listening, be careful around water. It's not a joke.
I will say congratulations. Well done.
Thank you.
As much as I have no time for Liverpool Football Club at all, what you've done this last season. Rivalries aside,
it's got to be a football club in Liverpool.
No, but I like you. I will say congratulations. Well done. Enjoy it. It's not happened for a long time. I mean, we've all won Premier League in the last few years.
Few is doing so much work there. The last few years. I had a few Jaffa cakes. The last few years.
Nah, 3, 10, 15, you know, whatever. Yeah. You know what I mean? Well done. We'll probably give you a call, get on the phone when you win it. You think it'll be Palace, is that right? The Palace game.
Palace is perfect. 4:30 Saturday. We've got to beat Everton in the meantime to do that, and that'll be difficult because they'll be desperate to make it. Yeah. But Palace 4:30 Saturday would feel as though things were lining up nicely.
He really wants that party, doesn't he?
Saturday night.
Can you win it at Everton? Is that not possible?
Yeah,
if,
but we need a couple of sides, sort of mid-table sides like Burnley and Arsenal to do us a favour.
1-1 nil. 1-1. Cheers coming on, Neil. And Anita, thanks for coming on as well.
Thank you. Where can
people find your podcast?
On Twitter and Instagram at GoldDiggersUK. And if you have Spotify, Apple Music and SoundCloud, same thing, GoldDiggers Podcast actually. So yeah, just give us a shout and make sure you listen.
Look at you.
Like and subscribe, mate.
You're all merched up, got the tops and everything. Yeah, look at you looking all professional. Okay. Yeah, yeah. I got wind mic covers.
I saw that.
You know what I mean? So that's 1-1. And cheers as well. Don't forget to subscribe to the podcast here on Spotify, Apple Music, across all the social media outlets as well. Till next week. Peace.